Hello and welcome to Top of the Progs on Smile Radio, and also in association with and broadcasting on Progzilla Radio. You're currently listening to Goodbye Stranger by Supertramp. I hope you enjoy it.
And I really have enjoyed my stay, but I must be moving on. Like a king without a castle, like a queen without a throne. And I must be moving on. Yeah, yeah. Now I believe in what you say is the undisputed truth, but I have to have things my own way to keep me in my youth. Like a ship without an anchor, like a slave without a chain. Sweet ladies, as I shiver out through my veins, and I'll go on shining, shining like brand new. I'll never look behind me, my troubles will be few.
Thank you.
That was the wonderful Goodbye Stranger from Supertramp's massive album Breakfast in America, released in 1979. Anyway, hello and welcome to Top of the Progs on Smile Radio, and also in association with and broadcasting on Progzilla Radio. I just wanted to say thank you to all of you new Progzilla listeners who came on the show last week and listened and were in the chat or listened on the podcast service, and all to you regular listeners on Smile Radio. The love that my show got last week, it was unreal seeing so many people reacting about the post. And that made me really happy. We have some big prog news. This is probably the biggest prog news in the last 20 years. Well, maybe not quite, but every time a legacy artist, so for example, when Genesis announced The Last Domino, they were just playing the hits. They were just, well, not exactly the hits, but you know, they were playing the classics from the 70s and 80s. That was the kind of thing. The tour was just for them to get on stage, have fun in front of crowds, playing the songs that everybody knows and loves from Genesis. But when Peter Gabriel announced his tour, it was to support an album he's been working on for now 20 years, that he started work on in 2003, and it's going to be called I/O. And yesterday, I believe it was, we received the first single from the album. This new single came as a shock. Peter Gabriel is releasing a song from the new album every single full moon, it seems, pretty much, which to us kind of hints at the fans cynically saying that the songs are not ready yet, Peter's still working on them. But the first single drops, and I must say, before we talk about the track and before I play it, I was a little bit disappointed that there was no video. I feel like Peter Gabriel has been such a leader in kind of media and multimedia and sustainability that I was a little bit upset that there was not even a lyric video or, you know, some kind of computer animation or even a music video, because I feel like nowadays if you want a song to do well, you have to do a music video for it. But regardless, we're going to have a listen to the brand new Peter Gabriel track right now. This is Panopticon by Peter Gabriel.
Thank you.
And there it is, the new Peter Gabriel album single after 20 long years. Yes, he's released little bits and pieces, like he did that I'm Amazing single about Muhammad Ali, and he did The Veil for the Edward Snowden documentary. And to be fair, I thought The Veil was a really solid track. I quite enjoyed it, and it was good fun. But there we have it, the panopticon. What do I think of the track? Well, to be honest, I still don't know. I listened to it 4 times the day it came out. I have a studio here, so I put it on my the studio monitors, and I had it nice and loud. And I don't know how what I feel about it. I think it's great in some ways because he's doing something new. A lot of the legacy artists, for example, Metallica dropped a new song about a month ago from their new album, 72 Seasons, called Lux Eterna. And Lux Eterna was a great song, but it just felt like a rehashing of Ride the Lightning and Kill 'Em All. Everyone was saying it was just a throwback. It was so similar to those old tracks, but this feels like Peter Gabriel's doing something new. You know, it doesn't feel like he's retreading old ground. He's not doing So Again, he's not doing Us or Up Again. He's doing something new, and that I really admire about it. The song has not clicked with me on a personal level yet, where I've not felt any emotions when I was listening to it. Like, I've not felt that euphoria, that deep euphoria that you get when you listen to a track like Red Rain or In Your Eyes, for example. But I'm sure that will come over time and when he performs them live as well. Moving on now to one of my favourite underrated progressive rock bands from the late 1970s, early 1980s. This is the band Sky. They were an amazing supergroup full of virtuoso musicians who get lampooned a lot for creating intellectual, what people call it is granny prog, because people's parents like Sky because they used to do classical music and stuff like that. But I'm a huge Sky fan, particularly Sky 2 onwards, Sky 2 through Cadmium, fantastic albums. This is probably my favourite track from the band's second album, Sky 2. This is Sahara. That was the fabulous Sahara by one of the most underrated classic era kind of progressive rock bands of all time, Sky. When Sky 2 was released in early 1980, it became the fastest selling double album of all time at the time and went platinum within 6 weeks, which is unbelievable, largely due to the success of the album's main single, the track Toccata, which was their interpretation of Bach's Toccata and Fugue in D minor. They did something really genius, like they get hated on a lot now, especially, well, like I made a documentary about Sky, for a bit of shameless self-promotion, I made a documentary about Sky just over a year ago, it's on my YouTube channel. Just search The Story of Sky on YouTube. And, you know, it was great when that video came out because it opened the conversation with people in, like, progressive rock groups on Facebook and on YouTube about prog rock and about Sky. And that's one of my favourite things about making documentary videos is opening up that conversation with fans for people to watch something and go, yeah, I remember that. Because, obviously, I wasn't there at the time, so it's nice to get that kind of personal insight from people saying, oh, I saw Sky in the 80s or I saw them at this. And a lot of people were like, one comment that made me laugh was, oh, I saw Sky back in 79 in Sheffield. It was amazing, apart from Tristan's drum solo, which didn't need to happen. And that just really made me laugh. I think Tristan's a fantastic drummer. Moving on now to a little bit of Alan Holdsworth. So this is one of his weirder albums. This is when he kind of veered off and went into his weird territory. He'd finished his contract with Warner Brothers, done the Road Games album, he'd done the Metal Fatigue album, and he just bought the Synthax. It was basically like a MIDI controller, except it was a guitar. It was like one of the first ones, and it allowed him to tune his guitar in weird tunings, and it created some of his best tracks. This is the title track from his 1986 album that has what I believe to be his finest ever guitar solo. This is Atavacron by Alan Holdsworth.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, there's only ever been one performance of a Tavacron, well, one well-recorded performance of a Tavacron live, and it's on the tour to support the album, and the syntax breaks during the track, so you don't actually get to hear him solo over the top of it. The other band just carry on kind of staring around awkwardly, but you feel so bad for him, like it's his big moment in the track, there's been all that build-up, and then just nothing happens. You're like, oh, poor Alan. I really love that song. I really love that album. I feel like in a lot of ways it's his most original album, because it would have just been too predictable for him to do another guitar album. And everything about that album is so alien and bad in a way, like, because it's so unfamiliar. Like, Gary Husband's drumming on that album is so unique and so different. Like, he says at that point in his life he was trying to create drum parts that were different. He had his drums in a really low tuning, which come across really well in that recording. Gary Husband says that he arrived in the States like the night before they started recording and got given a cassette of the songs, and then the next day just turned up and like hammered out most of the tracks on the album. And it's just incredible, like, especially the hybrid of syntax and real guitar on that. One of the main criticisms of that era is that it's hard to tell what's guitar and what's keyboard, like, because he's used the MIDI controller. I get that, but most of that is Alan on the syntax, apart from the keyboard solo, which is Alan Pasquale from the Tony Williams band. Anyway, moving on now to a little bit of Yes, with one of our favourites from the band's mid-80s album, 90125. This is a weird one because it has, like, a prog introduction glued onto the start of what just seems like a normal pop song, but nonetheless, I love it. This is Changes by Yes. We'll be right back.
can I look into your eyes and try to find out how? There's no way to save it.
It's a great track, that. It's one of my favourites off 90125. It's just a lot of fun to listen to, and there's some great moments in that. I think it's funny, like, how similar the verses are to Message in a Bottle by the Police. That's one thing that's always stuck out to me, like, just that do-do-do-do-do-do. It's kind of that Andy Summers kind of, like, suspended second thing that's kind of the Police and Sting and him have kind of trademarked, but nonetheless, it's a great song that I really enjoy. Next up, we've got a bit of Jean-Michel Jarre with an interesting song from an interesting period in his career. Basically, in 1980, he was basically invited over to China. China wanted to show the world at this point that they were embracing change and embracing modernity. So Jean-Michel Jarre was invited over to do a series of concerts around Beijing. It was very strange, like, basically nobody in China had heard a synthesizer at that point or heard an instrument that wasn't used in an orchestra or a traditional Chinese instrument, and he was treated like a god. There is footage of him walking around China and, like, people thinking that he's some sort of wizard because his music was played on Chinese radio in the lead-up to get people interested in the concerts. There's footage of, like, him going to rural farms on China and people thinking he's some sort of, like, magic wizard because he can work these electronic instruments that people have got no concept of. But anyway, it produced the live album and concert film The Concerts in China, and it's one of his best albums, maybe his best album, because after this, like, when Jean-Michel Jarre did live concerts, the first live show he did, Concert de Concorde in Paris in the late 70s to promote Oxygen and Equinox, it was mimed. It was an actual concert. He literally played back the LPs of both albums and pretended to play them live, and yes, it was a groundbreaking concert synced with the visuals and the fireworks and everything, but it wasn't actually live. And there's other concerts like Destination Docklands. It's debatable how much of what he's playing is actually live and what's pre-recorded, but on the concerts in China, you can tell he's got an actual drummer there, he's got an actual band, and the drummer's playing like a Simmons electronic kit type thing, but you can tell everything is live because of just the way it feels, the energy, the mix and everything. This is like the last song he performed. This was his encore from the Concerts in China album. This is one of my favourites. This is Magnetic Fields Part 2 by Jean-Michel Jarre. Just absolutely fabulous track there from our main man, Jean-Luc Michel Jarre. I absolutely love that. It's so exciting. The studio version is fabulous. Of course, it's meticulously recorded and produced, but that live one, it's got that end of a concert vibe, you know. The audience are buzzing. Jean-Michel Jarre is buzzing. The concert film was shot on film and is fantastic, but it's only available in low-res copies. So Jean-Michel Jarre, please, if you're listening to this, transfer the negatives of the concert in China so we can get a new 4K Blu-ray release, because that would be absolutely fantastic. Anyway, it felt a bit unfair to play Jean-Michel Jarre without playing my other electronic European favourites, Kraftwerk, with another song that was released similar time a few years before from their album The Man Machine. This is probably my favourite Kraftwerk song. This is Neon Lights by Kraftwerk. It's such an awesome track, is Neon Lights by Kraftwerk, as is the whole of the Man Machine album. It's a really special album. What's interesting about that is there's a great video by Dr. Mix where he goes through the Man Machine. He gets the LP and he puts it on a record player, and he's got like a stack of analog synthesizers and old analog equipment with him. And what he does is he breaks down like every single synthesized sound, every drum part and what it is. And what's amazing about all that kind of Kraftwerk stuff is, of course, there was no automation in those days. Now, if you were doing that electronic kind of thing, you would just program everything. So, like, that synthesizer bass that sweeps upwards and goes, pow, and then reaches that kind of top resonant note. Nowadays, you program that in so it would be perfect every single time. But when Kraftwerk did it, they'd have to play the note, then twist the resonance knob until they found that specific frequency that they were looking for, and do that every time there was a bass note hit that song. And yeah, it's just amazing that they all did it manually and by hand, and that they were able to be so precise and so robotic with it. Anyway, we're now unfortunately nearing the end of this week's show. I'd like to close now with a little bit of 80s King Crimson, with a song from the band's 1981 studio album, Discipline. This is one of my favourite songs. This is by far one of the weirdest tracks King Crimson ever did. It's so heavy. Bill Bruford's drumming is so wild on the track, and it's absolutely loads of fun. This is Indiscipline by King Crimson. Thank you all for listening. I hope you have a good week. Goodbye.
I do remember one thing. It took hours and hours, and by the time I was done with it, I was so involved, I didn't know what to think. I carried it around with me for days and days, playing little games, like not looking at it for a whole day, and then looking at it to see if I still liked it.
I did!
I repeat myself when under stress. The more I look at it, the more I like it. I do think it's good. The fact is, no matter how closely I study it, no matter how I take it apart, No matter how I break it down, it remains consistent.
I wish you were here to see it.